This is Jean McMillan interviewing David MacArthur at his home, 408 Lime Rock Road, Lime Rock, Connecticut. The date is April 25th, 2012. May I have your full name?
Oh, you mean my middle name too?
Oh, go for it.
Oh, gosh. Okay, David Arnold MacArthur.
And where were you born, David?
I was born at Sharon Hospital in Sharon, Connecticut, July 26, 1951.
And what are your parents' names?
My father's name was Frank C. MacArthur, Sr. My mother's name, maiden name, was Sadie Mae Reed. Of course, her married name was Sadie Mae MacArthur.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
I do.
How many?
I've got two brothers. One is a twin. And I had three sisters, but my eldest sister died.
May I have their names?
Sure. My oldest sister's name was Cynthia MacArthur. I'll give just maiden names. Cynthia, and I'll give you in chronological order, oldest being first. Cynthia, Sandra, Frankie, my older brother, myself, David, my twin brother, Doug, and my younger sister, Deborah.
All right. Now, David, would you tell me a bit about your educational background?
Sure. Let's see. I attended Salisbury Central School, graduated from Central School probably 1965. Yeah. Then I went to Housatonic, Valley Regional High School, and graduated from there in 1969. I did a postgraduate course at a local private school. Ended after like a semester because I was restless and didn't really know what to do with myself. Eventually, though, I get a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology from the SUNY system in New York, New Paltz. And I went back to school later and get a master's degree in social work from the SUNY system at Albany. And I received that a master's degree in social work in 1998. And since that time, I've worked as a social worker on and off and done various other things.
Tell me a little bit about some of your early memories growing up in Salisbury.
Ah.
And we've got a list.
Okay. Okay. Well, let me just start with this, because I had a fella here at my house earlier today, and he and I were walking in my woods, and he's got two young kids, and last Saturday, as you may or may not know, was the opening day of fishing season in Connecticut.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, and it was a perfect day. It was like overcast skies, but warm. And I said, Gary, did you take your kids fishing? And he went, oh my goodness, he went, and the kids had a great time. But he said, there were hardly any people there, which in my day.
Oh my.
Yeah, in my day. There were kids there at the crack of dawn. There were adults there fishing on the lake, the Grove building. People were eating breakfast, the whole nine yards. Very vibrant, busy. It was great. So one of the things that that I did a lot of as a kid growing up was to fish, whether it be in the lake or the brooks or the ponds. But that's one of the activities that a lot of us guys partook in. It was fun. We'd be out there from morning till late afternoon. Sometimes we'd go in the evening and go bullheading and so on. So, fishing was huge. Sports in general. Baseball, I grew up playing baseball. I lived right next to the baseball field on the other side of the tracks, if you will, in Lakeville. So I'd walk over the tracks and I'd play with my brothers, sisters, friends, and we'd be there in the summertime all day long playing baseball, whether it was on the traditional field, or we play like against the screen. We play wiffle ball. We play hardball. We play from second base out. There was just many different ways we would play the game. But
and this was not organized little league. This was scratch games, pickup games.
Oh, this was fun. This is what we kids wanted to do. This was there were no adults involved. This is how we lived our lives. This is what we found fun and entertaining. Yes, there was a time when I played organized baseball, starting with Little League, but even while I was playing Little League and all the others, we were just playing on our own as kids. We were motivated just by playing the game because we loved the game.
And that's so important. That's so important. Now, did you have any jobs when you were growing up? Like newspaper boy?
Jobs. Ha! Huh. Funny you should say that, Gene.
I did my homework.
I did, in fact. Seventh or eighth grade, probably seventh, I had a job, and I delivered the Lakeville Journal throughout town. Because back in the day, the Journal building, which is, it was in a different location. It's not where it currently is. So I would, on Thursdays, I would come home from school, and I'd go up to the Lakeville Journal building, go inside.
Now, are you talking about the Journal building at Pocket Knife Square or Agassiz Art?
Thank you. I'm talking about the Journal building at Pocket Knife Square.
Thank you.
When I was a kid, that's where its location was. And the administrative people, people did all the paperwork, so to speak, they were up on the first floor. And Ray Folks, Kenny Weir, Bill Stanton, all these other folks, they ran the big machines downstairs. And so I'd collect my satchel upstairs, go downstairs where the big machines were making crazy noises, and I'd stuff my satchel with X number of newspapers. And I had customers on just pretty much every street in town. And so I would go to their homes and give them the paper, and they'd give me my 25 cents, I think it was back then. There was a factory back then right across from the Journal building called Kufel and Effel. And the first place I would go to when I got the newspapers was right there. And random people would buy X number of papers. But then I'd be on my journey, and I'd go to the customers who were weekly and monthly, and it was great. And I'd walk up and down the town. When it was really nasty weather, on occasion my mother would drive me.
Bless her heart.
Oh, I love my dear mother, Sadie. I remember one time I was delivering the paper, and it was a rainy day, so my mother was driving me. And this happened on Walton Street. The family, their last name was Pitcher. And so, and they had a little picket fence, you know, the whole bit, small yard. And they had a little beagle dog, right? Nasty little guy. So on this particular day, my mother drove me up. I opened the gate to the fence. I walk up with my satchel. I knocked on the door, rang the doorbell. Mrs. Pitcher came, paper, money exchange. As I began to walk back down the sidewalk, the dog, I could see my mother in the car going, you know, making faces like, watch out. And the next thing I know, that little dog jumped up on my side and bit me.
Ooh.
Ah, nasty little thing.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I went to the hospital and got a shot and all that, but I was fine. But anyhow, it was beautiful. I loved to walk around town and deliver the paper. There's other incidences that I think of right now. Different people, different homes that are no longer there. People, obviously, that have died. So that was probably one of my first jobs, was to deliver the paper throughout town. And it was I enjoyed that a lot.
It's a good experience. It's a good experience for kids because they get to organize themselves, they get to handle money, they get to make change, they make friends that they wouldn't necessarily make within their peer group.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you do in the wintertime? You couldn't play ball in the wintertime.
Oh, come on, wintertime, are you kidding me? There were fields, right, with hills, so we would sled. We would sled, we would toboggan, you know, we would ski on some of these small hills, we'd build like little jumps, and we'd ski down the hills and hit a jump, and so we spent a lot of time doing that, and if we weren't doing that, we were over at the factory pond in Lakeville, ice skating.
Right.
You know, we ice skated from, you know, if there was no school, you'd be over there from when you got up in the morning till night.
Did you play hockey?
Oh, yeah, we played pickup hockey all the time. Oh, yeah, we played. There was always a couple of goals over there on the pond. The town of Salisbury, they would come and clean the ice off. If there was snow, they would clean the ice off for us. Oh, yeah, they'd have these snow blowers, or they'd have a tractor with a blade on it, and they'd push the snow so that we could ice skate, whether you were playing hockey or just free skating. That was something they did, which was wonderful.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, we did a lot of that. We played football on the ice. People would say, what? You played football? We played tackle football on the ice late at night.
Sure.
Oh, it was just fun. And we play a game called Crack the Whip.
Oh, yes.
Where there'd be a bunch of us holding hands, you know, and the fastest guy, you're leading, and you'd go as fast as you could. And then at the end, you'd stop, and then the thing would whip, and the person in the end would go flying. Oh, it was great. And back then, some people may recall, there was a swinging bridge that spanned across the factory pond.
Yes.
And so we would skate underneath that. Okay, we'd skate underneath that. You know, of course, there was usually a separation at that point where the hockey guys would play on one side and then the free skaters would play on the other side. But that bridge was there, and we'd skate under it.
Oh, my word.
And back to the fishing part, of course, we would fish.
You do ice fishing?
Yeah. No. Not ice fishing. No. But, you know, I was just saying that when I was a kid, we fished a lot, too. So, excuse me, one of the things we would do when we fished at the factory pond, we would be on that swinging bridge, fishing.
Yeah.
But anyhow, in winter time, we spent a lot of time ice skating on that pond. And because winters were winters back then, and there was tons of snow all the time, and the pond, Lakeville Lake, was always froze, and we used to glide around the lake, you know, you'd spend hours skating on black ice around the lake, across the thing. It was great.
It was wonderful.
So we spent all of our time growing up outside, outdoors. I mean, it was just what we did because it was fun. And besides, you know, and especially in the summertime, your mother would say, all right, you kids get outside. Whether it was playing kick the can or whatever, it didn't matter. We were outside.
You were outside.
We were outside. It was good.
Tell me about the steps.
Oh, yeah, the steps. See, when I was growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in Lakeville, Lakeville was a real town, self-contained town. We had a couple of different stores where you could buy foodstuffs. There was a place called the Five and Dime, Ben Franklin. It was owned by a man named Bill Barnett. And you could buy clothes.
Bill Barnett or Dwight Miller?
I thought it was Bill Barnett owned it for a while. It was because we used to call it Bill Barnett's, yeah. Yeah, you're thinking, I know who you're thinking of, Darwin Miller.
Darwin Miller.
He came after.
Okay.
After, because Barnett owned it.
First, right.
He owned it first. So they had this great place, great store there, upstairs. And one of the things that was so great about the upstairs portion of this was, in the winter, Christmas time, you know, they had wooden floors, but they had all the toys up there and sleds and toboggans. And a man named Bill Rainsford, who was a judge, big man, he would play Santa Claus up there. So us kids loved to be up on that second floor because of what it represented. Toys, games, right? Christmas, it represented, and they would decorate it. So that's a fond memory, very fond memory.
Do you remember the train layout?
Oh, the train layout was there. It was beautiful. Yeah, the kids loved it.
Yeah.
And I used to like to look up the back window, overlooking the ball field and the railroad track and all that, because there'd always be a ton of snow and all that stuff. But anyhow, so there was that store. There was an A&P food store. There was a package store. There was a park lunch. There was a couple of barber shops in town. There was a jeweler. There was a cobbler, a real cobbler. You know, Danny LaFrito.
Yeah.
He was our shoe man. You could actually take shoes there, and he could fix them. Or you could buy new shoes really cheap back then. There was a pharmacy. We had a regular pharmacy in town. Salisbury Bank and Trust was located up on the hill where Wagner McNeil Insurance is today. So the town was very, very different back then, self-contained town. So you really didn't have to go anywhere.
Mm.
You didn't have to leave town to buy clothes.
To buy food.
To do anything.
Yeah.
It was all. So anyhow, so right there where the park lunch was, and there were these steps that led up to Paul Argyle's barbershop, and then there was an apartment up above that. But anyhow, the steps, okay, it was the center of town, and we kids would often meet there on the steps. We would sit on the steps and watch people come through town. You know, our friends would come up. That was our gathering spot right across the little park there by the firehouse. It was a gathering spot. And we'd sit and plot and plan what we were going to do that day. Good, bad, and indifferent.
Doesn't
right?
make any difference.
But it was a great place to sit, you know. It was like a gathering point. So we,
sure.
we loved that. Yeah. So that's a very vivid memory that sticks out. And images. I see images of people coming through town. There's a guy named Peter Marks, who was older than me, and Sonny Brazzali, who was older than me.
Uh-huh.
And those guys, back in the day, they all had like their fancy big hot rod cars, right? They were like Ford Fairlanes, convertibles, or, you know, just these beautiful cars that they maintained. They were shiny and beautiful, and
uh-huh.
of course, they made noise, right? They were real muscle cars.
That's
so,
part of it.
Oh, yeah, that was great. That was great. So that was wonderful. So, but anyhow, yeah, that was very different back then. It was a great time to grow up.
Now, I'm going to ask you about some people.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about Dr. Joe Everts, please.
Dr. Joe, yeah. Well, first of all, Dr. Joe, as you say, she brought me into this world. She mm-hmm. brought all my siblings and me into this world. Wonderful woman. She would come to our house, yeah. make house calls.
Yeah.
Very strong, positive woman. I think one of the only woman doctors around at the time. But she wasn't like a doctor, because she was somebody who you could talk to. She was one of the friends, someone who really cared.
Yes.
The woman had compassion, which made her different from some of the others. So she was someone who was just part of your family.
Yeah. yeah.
And on occasion, she'd come to the house at dinner time, and she'd sit down and eat with us.
Mm-hmm.
So she was a wonderful person we all loved and respected.
Tell me about Mr. Hemmerly.
Skull! Mr. Wilbur Hemmerly was a wonderful, wonderful man. In my opinion, he was a great asset to this town, Lakeville, back in the day. Mr. Hemmerly was, as far as I know, the first recreation director that I ever knew in this area, in this town. And he was a dedicated man who made things work for young kids. He'd always be at the baseball field working on something so the kids could play, whether it were the swings that they had down there, the sandbox. Then they'd have other games. Mr. Hemmerly was always kind of putting together and coordinating. He taught us basketball, I remember, at the grammar school. He was very much into baseball. My father was younger than Mr. Hemmerly, and so my father learned a lot from Mr. Hemmerly. Because Hem, as my father used to call him, he was all about the outdoors and baseball
mm-hmm.
and making things work for kids, giving kids fun things to do so that they didn't get into trouble. So he did. And back in the day,
okay.
we used to have these carnivals all the time. If it was 4th of July, you know, big parade, blah, 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 Memorial Day, big parade. And then the carnivals out at the ball field. Now, during these parades, I can see right now Mr. Hemmerly driving his old, it was a Ford, maybe a Fairlane, and it was a two-tone yellow and white car. And I think it had the top would be down. And of course, Mr. Hemmerly, he got the nickname Skull, you know, because that's what us kids did. Ballheaded, okay? He's ballheaded.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see him now riding in the parade with that top down, with ball head shining, yeah?
Yeah.
It was great. And Mr. Hemmerly was a fireman. He gave a lot to the community. And I can see him marching, you know, with the
yeah.
firemen.
Yeah.
Great man, Mr. Hemmerly. And his wife was, she was a school teacher
yeah.
at Salisbury Central, another great woman. So he was a strong character, somebody who I looked up to a lot. And again, I think he did a whole lot for the town, especially the town's kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now I'd like to get into your father's coaching baseball, some of the baseball background.
Yeah, my father, yeah. Well, let's see. When I was two, probably, my father said, okay, you guys are going to start playing baseball. So again, as I said earlier, I have a twin brother and an older brother. And my father was a baseball player from when he was a kid, so he loved the game like we did. So he passed that on to us. So as little kids, we began playing ball in the backyard, in the front yard, of the ball field. You know, wherever we could play, we'd play. But my father, he was behind that. He would take us over to the ball field and hit us ground balls or hit fungos. Yeah, people are going, what the hell are fungos? Well, fungos are the long, skinny bat that coaches would use to hit fly balls to the outfielders to during practice. You know? Anyhow, so my father would hit fungos to us, and we'd be out there learning how to catch fly balls, ground balls, and the like. So, again, we would play a lot of baseball just on our own. And then when I was old enough to play Little League, of course, my father was behind that, so we played Little League ball for a number of years. And after I was too old for that, we played Babe Ruth, which was a league for kids that were probably, I don't know, 13 to 15. So I played that. And from that, we played high school ball, Legion ball, men's league ball. Because my father was such an advocate of the game, I began playing we began playing in the men's league at age 15 because my father, you know, he was such a good coach, and we had a little bit of talent that we were able to compete on a level with these older guys. And so, you know, we did, and that was a whole lot of fun. But my father was very influential, not just for my brothers and me and our family, but all the guys in town, you know, a lot of guys in town. Today, you know, my father died back in 98, but, you know, I'll see guys today, and they'll say, gosh, you know, I remember, you know, your father being at the ball field, coaching third base, you know, or coming out to take the pitcher out of the game, or just to give you guys a pep talk, because that's kind of what my father did. Now, when I was real little, my father played on the organized men's league. You know, we used to go and watch him play, and he was very fast. Right.
What position?
My father played third base.
Okay.
He was very fast. So he's very quick. He'd steal a lot of bases. But one of the bad habits my father did not impart on us was his love of trying to hit high fastballs. Oh my God! Oh, I can see my father now striking out, going after the high hard one, ball over his head. He'd be just swinging, and he'd never hit it. Now, my father was not a big guy, right? And I was certainly a small guy. My father used to use his bat. Of course, everything was wooden back then. He used a bat. It was called Nelson Fox, who was a famous professional baseball player. This bat was a fat bat, a fat handle, and a fatter head. But he used that bat, and he taught me how to use that bat because I was a small guy. And my father taught me how to just hit, how to be a hitter, not a slugger, but somebody who would be a good contact hitter. And throughout my life, I was a pretty good contact hitter. Mm-hmm. And I would also use a big handle bat until much later in life. And then I began using a thinner handle bat. But my father also said that because I was small, he taught me that when I held my hands in the bat, because I didn't have a whole lot of power, to separate my hands a little bit and hit the ball that way. One, I'd have more control, and I'd be able to contact the ball better. And so, you know, I was able to punch the ball left field, right field, pretty much, you know.
Anywhere you wanted it to go.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So that worked for me throughout my baseball time. So baseball was huge. My father was a great influence. He loved the game. He coached men's league for probably 30 years. And we won championships. I mean, they won many different championships, and they were in different leagues. I think the earliest league I can remember my father being in was called the Interstate League. And they played teams in Poughkeepsie, Arlington, Winsted, Amelia, Pine Plains, Millerton, Litch, all over. We played teams out in West Hartford and Hartford. You know, they played a lot. And as I got older, you know, I would play out there as well. So there was the Interstate League, Pomeroy League, and then it became the Tri-State League. So there were just different leagues, and, you know, all the rules were pretty much the same. They were just different teams in different areas. But it was something that was a mainstay in all of our local communities back in that era, the 50s, 60s, and even the early 70s. And when we played our games on Sunday afternoons, 2 o'clock, and the ball field in Lakeville would be full of people. People would be sitting in their cars, people would be sitting under the trees. We had grandstands back then that are no longer there. So people would come from near and far and root for the teams. You know, I mean, the opposing team, they'd bring people. So this was a big thing. Sunday baseball, it was a big thing. It was like part of America, right? And so part of America filtered down to the small communities, and this is what people did.
When would it start? April, May?
Oh, yeah. Well, we'd be out there practicing in April, right? And we weight practice on Tuesday and Thursday nights from 6 o'clock to probably 8:30. Uh-huh. And we'd have batting practice, infield practice, the whole bit. And the season would end sometime in September, I think, the end of August, early September.
Okay. Were there any towns or teams that were your rivals?
Yeah. Yes, there was, Gene. Our prime rival throughout my career was the town of Amenia.
Ooh, New York.
Amenia Monarchs, they were called, yeah. So we, rivals, you know. And they always had very, very, very talented ball players, as we did. And we had great games, you know, tough games. People would come out and bet on games. All of our games were always close, like one run ball games. You know, we didn't score a lot of runs because the pitching was very good.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of fast-paced action, a lot of you get on base and steal a base. But those guys were our number one rival, and they loved to beat us when they could, and we enjoyed whipping them. and then we'd always play for a championship, typically. We'd be playing them, and they'd play us, and they would win. We would win.
It was a good evenly distributed.
Evenly distributed, I'd say that, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Amenia. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you give me the names of some of the men that you played with in this league?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just local guys?
Yeah.
Sure. All right. So when I was probably 15, 16, there were guys playing. There's a guy named Steve Griggs, who family's up on Mount Riga. They used to call him Radar, because he played shortstop. Nothing ever got by this guy. And he had a decent arm. Nothing got by. A guy named Andy Russo. He lived in Lime Rock. He was a heck of a ball player. He had a lot to do with recreation in Lakeville, too. There were guys from Hotchkiss School. Jeff Marchand, right? He was a colleague of mine, I guess you'd say, because he came here in 1973, I believe it was, mm-hmm. After school. And he's up at Hotchkiss School teaching, and he's still there. But he played with us from then up until I stopped playing. Pat Dineen, another local kid I grew up with. Johnny Gardner, kid from Salisbury School who played great baseball. He was a mainstay. Of course, my brothers played. Bullet Bob Sherwood played. He was a great he was a great guy to have on your team. Mike Boscardy, Gary Smith played a couple times. There were older guys, so when I was a kid, I used to watch them play. Russ Chandler, Art White, Blair Torrey. These guys were all from Hotchkiss School. Mm-hmm. Chris Getman, big left-hander. God, he was tough. He was about 6'7", big guy. He threw the ball hard, right? He was a guy from Hotchkiss School as well. Gosh, there was a guy named Johnny Neville. And this guy, Johnny Neville, what the hell's that one guy's name? Johnny Neville... Bob Constantine, they were my father's peers, so I used to watch them play. One of the things that really stands out in my mind is back then, pretty much every team, or at least we did, they had a bat boy, or a bat man, if you will. And that person was responsible for keeping your bats in order, keeping your helmets in order, and the equipment, and the balls, and making it very neat and orderly. And we had a guy, or at least when I was a kid, and then when I began to play, too, he was still around. His name was Dougie Ostrander, and we used to call him Doug the Bat Boy. He was a great guy, this old guy. He was from Salisbury. I could see him now. He's a pretty big guy. He used to wear coveralls. a little bit humped over, but a big guy, great guy. He wore a funny hat. You know, it was always cocked off to the side. But he maintained those bats with dignity. I mean, he really respected the game and respected his position as the bat boy, and he took a lot of pride in that, and he maintained it well. He was a good guy. Yeah, and that really sticks out, that and how well he maintained the equipment. Yeah.
How wonderful.
Yeah, that was great. It was great.
Now, tell me about some of the civic activities that you do. Coaching or...
Sure. Well, there was a time. I haven't done much coaching at all in years, but I've coached Little League baseball. I used to umpire baseball games, and I would sometimes referee a little bit of basketball in the winter time. But yeah, I did some of that. Not a ton, though. I was too busy doing other things, I think. But I did.
But you've given back to the community.
Oh, sure. I've done that. Yeah. But with the sports, you know, I've always taught kids on the side. Mm-hmm. I've always done that kind of thing. But my wife and I now, we have this foundation, Time Out Foundation, if you
That's
will.
That's the next question.
Uh-huh.
Go for it.
Okay. And this foundation, we've had it in place now for 3-4 years. And it was an idea of my wife's. She always wanted to give back to the community, to the kids who otherwise wouldn't be able to ride horses. So we have a bunch of horses. And so we started this foundation with the main emphasis being equine therapy. And we have a wonderful instructor. Her name is Glynis Simon. And we've reached out and to the community, and we have a bunch of kids that come from locally, kids from Winstead, a couple of kids from Torrington that come out here, and they learn how to ride a horse. And they learn to ride. They have to groom the horse. They muck stalls. They do the whole bit, which gives them a better sense of responsibility, better sense of self, and a better picture of what it's like to have your own animal.
Right? And it's also discipline.
And it's also discipline, yeah. So that's a wonderful program. So we have the Time Out Foundation, and that the equine therapy is a piece of it. And then our director is a guy named Ed Thorney. And Ed, he has a mentoring program. So we have a few people who serve as mentors to these young kids. And Ed was very instrumental behind that. So we have kids. Ed will take some of these kids who are in school, like elementary or middle schools, who may have some behavioral issues. He will take them once a week for 4 hours, and he will mentor them. He'll walk in the woods.
That's a good long time. He'll do
kayaking, whatever it is, you know, just to get that one-on-one stuff with a responsible adult.
And to build a trust
build
with
trust.
A responsible adult so that you can express your concerns, your issues.
Absolutely.
To somebody that's going to take your side.
It's going to take your side, that's right. Someone who's not going to judge you, or, you know, you will not be disciplined in any way.
No.
Right. So that's very instrumental. And the other piece is we do substance abuse treatment here. I mean, I'm a therapist, and I do a lot of work with people with addiction issues. So, you know, I'm very busy with that. And my wife, being a physician, she can prescribe medication for these folks. So we've reached out to the community at large with that piece. And unfortunately, there's a lot of addiction issues out here today with all the pain medications and all the opiates that are out there, and then the heroines and all this other bad stuff. There's a lot of it, and there's a lot of people in our community, and the community next to ours, and every community across the country, unfortunately, today, where we have these big problems with opiate abuse and alcohol. So anyhow, that's in a snapshot. That's kind of what the foundation is. Very powerful. It's growing. We're getting lots of recognition. In fact, we've had, for the past 2 years, we've had what we call a family festival. It's a fundraiser to help us with monies to fund the program. And that's been very positive. This summer, on June 10th, which is a Sunday, the family festival will go from 11 in the morning to 6 in the evening, and there'll be horseback riding. We now have a ropes course on the property, so there'll be elements of the ropes course that will be open to the public or people who come to the festival. There will be we have a couple of guys who have worked with school systems for the past 15 years, and they do reenactments of like the French and Indian War period. So they will come here the night before the festival, and they'll dress up in period clothing. They'll dig a fire pit in the ground. They'll have a tent from that time period, and they'll teach people the next day during the festival how to shoot a bow and arrow, how to throw a tomahawk, And then if you have questions about that historic period, these guys can just give you all the information. So that's a very positive part of the festival. Well, somebody painting kids' faces. There'll be a llama that people can pet. There's going to be hula hooping displays. There'll be musicians playing. We'll have our good friend Dylan Baker, who's a Taekwondo teacher. He'll be here with his school putting on displays. So it's a great family fun day. There'll be food for sale. So it's a great day to come and just have fun.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, is there anything that I haven't covered in this interview that you'd like to add?
Oh, goodness. Well, let's see, Gene. Let me count the things.
We've got another side of the table.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. I mean, I could go on and on and on. But again, I think that, just to wrap it up, when I think about my time as a kid growing up in this community, and I look at today's community and communities, I'm just very thankful that I was born when I was born and to have done the things that I did and had the parents that I had and the other adults and the people around when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, because it seemed, and I hope this is not just because I was a kid, that things were safer, people were more open, people were more giving, and it was a good community. So
it was a good time
to
be a kid.
Good time to be a kid. Yep.
Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.